like show business, like no business I know. Everything about it is appealing, everything the traffic will allow. Nowhere could you get that happy feeling when you are stealing that extra bow. There's no people like show people. They smile when they are alone. Yesterday they told you you would not go far. That night you opened and there you are. Next day on your dressing room they hung a star and go on with the show. The costumes, the scenery, the makeup, the props, the audience that lifts you when you're down. The headaches, the heartaches, the backaches, the flops, the sheriff who escorts you out of town, the opening when your heart beats like a drum, the closing when the customers don't come. There's no business like no business, like no business I know. Get word before the show has started that your favorite uncle died at dawn. And top of that, your partner has parted. You're brokenhearted, but you go on. There's no people like no people. They smile when they are alone. Even with a turkey that you know will hold, you may be stranded out in the cold. Still, you wouldn't change it.
To a rousing start once again. Hello and welcome to another edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hoke, your host. Glad to have you with us on this Monday morning here in the city as you listen to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station, right here in Kansas City. Interesting show for you again today. First off, we're going to talk about a musical that's going on in town you might be interested in. And secondly, if you're a fan of jazz and the mob and things like that, the author of a new book will be with us to tell us all about that. But first things first, let's journey on over to the Center Union at Crown Center. The only upstairs theater left at Crown Center. Aww. Right now, the off-center theater at Crown Center, where Eubank Productions, actually a division of the EGADS.
That's right.
Center.
Yeah. Yes.
How do you explain?
We've evolved. We've evolved, Michael. We are still the Eubanks, but now we're EGADS Theater Company.
EGADS Theater Company, a division of Eubank Productions, making it sound much bigger than it is. Stephen Eubank is with us, and he brought along Shelby Floyd with him. They're going to tell us about their show currently running over at the Off Center Theater in Crown Center. In fact, there's a performance tonight.
That's right, 8 p.m. at the Off-Center Theater.
Of their new show, Tell Me on a Sunday. And, you know, I always hate to summarize shows, but it is an Andrew Lloyd Webber show. It's a one-act. It's a sung-through musical about a girl looking for fame and love. And will she find it? Who knows? It's the year 2013. I don't know. Does that
Well, actually, we flash back to the year 1985. So, you know, you really don't know what you're going to find in that retro mid-80s.
That's right. Well, let's introduce the people involved, the characters involved. Stephen Eubank is with us. He is the director and the producer, I would imagine, of Tell Me on Sunday. He has directed, at EGADS, his own theater company at the American Heartland Theater, at Musical Theater Heritage, co-directed at the Unicorn, appeared in the show Altar Boys, at the Coterie, other shows as well. I described him earlier to someone who asked for a description. I said a young theater entrepreneur.
I love that, yes. Yeah,
well, good.
Yes.
Because that's what I say. So you're like, Shelby Floyd is with us as well, actress and singer. She is the girl in question that's looking for fame and looking for love in all the wrong or right places. We'll find out as we go along. She has appeared in many things around here as well. She has appeared in Unexpected Song, Tell Me on a Sunday, the Rocky Horror Picture Show, In Trousers. I guess she and Stephen actually met when you auditioned at Johnson County Community College for the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yes, when I was 16. When I was 16, I auditioned for the show, and I ended up getting cast, and my parents had to sign a release form so that I could be... So that I could be in the show.
Was it that bad, Stephen?
It was pretty naughty. We actually were considering her first for Janet until we realized that at 16 she would be getting, you know, potentially molested by whatever character was playing Rocky and Frankenfurter. And so we put her into Trixie Magenta, and it was a fabulous decision. She stole the show.
Yeah, when you make casting decisions, do you look for new faces?
Always, yeah, absolutely. That is actually part of the mission of EGAZ Theater Company, is to foster new promising talent in the Kansas City area. We are very proud that many of our alumni have graduated to become members of Actors Equity Association and performed for other theater companies. We, of course, are still non-union, so that's one of the reasons why we're always on the look for young, fresh talent.
Yeah, I might ask Shelby if she wants to add to her list of credits there.
Well, Stephen cast me in my very first professional show, In Trousers, and that kind of led into working with the Coterie. We did Seussical together and also Spring Awakening together, and I have also performed with Musical Theater Heritage. I most recently was Miss Irene Malloy in Hello, Dolly, and also recently did Hello Again with Spinning Tree Theater that Stephen also acted in.
We like to do shows that are named Hello Something.
Oh. Yes.
Very nice. Very nice. Well, do you want to add to your credits at all? What if I...
sure, Michael, why
what
not?
What if I left out?
No, the only other thing that I'd love to talk about is I've choreographed for a bunch of different theaters in town as well. In fact, I think I've gotten more work as a choreographer in Kansas City than as a director, although directing is the first love and the first passion. And that's really why Eubank Productions began, was because I loved directing and I didn't know where to get that exposure. So make your own theater company. And then through that, fortunately, I've been able to network and make a lot of connections.
You have made quite a name for yourself.
Well, thank you, sir.
I remember I saw a show, sometime within the last 2 years, and I was asked, well, what is this most representative of? And he said, well, his shows are always very energetic, and the actors were running all around the stage. And I remember I commented to someone and said, well, actually, this is kind of subdued for a Eubank show.
Well, and also true with Tell Me on a Sunday, you know, Shelby being the only woman on stage, we still make her run up and down and all around whatever set we have there at Off Center Theater. But she seems to handle it with ease and grace.
Not backstage. Backstage, I'm like, somebody help me get this dress off. There's a lot of quick costume changes because there's nobody else who's going to come out on stage. So, that's probably been one of the most challenging things, just getting from point A to point B in a different costume. Then, you know, when you get on stage, the singing part, it's like, you know, this is the good part.
This is the breeze. This is the easy stuff.
Yeah. Well, you consider yourself more of a singer, actress,
combo? I've been singing since I was 2 years old. I love singing my whole life, and it's just mind-blowing that I'm singing, 18 songs a night?
Yeah, 18 or 19.
People want to come hear me sing that many songs. It's just, I'm having a blast, and I hope as many people as... I don't know how to phrase that. I hope a lot of people come and see it because I'm very happy to be doing it.
Yeah, it is something to be very proud of. It's a project I started talking to Shelby about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And then I finally said, okay, I'm done talking about it. Let's just really make this happen. When are you free? When do you not have a project?
Are you consciously moving from the more wild and woolly shows to something with more? This sounds like it's more subdued and it has a lot of meaning to it.
Well, this one's very sweet. It's universal. You know, it's dealing with misadventures and romance. And in 1 year's time, I'm going to, spoiler alert, in 1 year's time, the character goes through four different romances, you know, as she's trying to find success and love. She's originally an English girl who's moved over to the States. And she does. She goes looking for love in all the wrong places.
Yeah.
The reason why I fell in love with it so much is because of the music. And it is one of Andrew Lloyd Webber's more obscure shows. So in terms of keeping with EGAD's theater company, we've found art, hopefully, again, in entertainment, in something that's a little more rare, a little more unknown. But it is. I mean, this one is geared toward a family audience, believe it or not. You could attend this one with the kids. There's one part of the show where she talks about an affair, but nothing gets too sultry in front of the audience.
Was that one of those four? No, don't tell.
Okay, we won't ruin it.
We don't want to ruin it for anybody. We're speaking with Stephen Eubank, the director, and Shelby Floyd, the actress and singer, in the EGADS Theater Company production of Tell Me on a Sunday. The next performance of Tell Me on a Sunday is tonight, Monday, November 18th, 8 o'clock p.m. at the Off Center Theater. I guess there's also one at 9:15 as well. Do you do double duty?
No, we don't. We thought about it. Okay. There would be time for it, but because it is such a vocally demanding show, one performance per night for Shelby is plenty.
Okay. So all of these other evenings, when I see two listed, there's really only one.
There's only one performance. Yeah.
Okay.
55-minute show, quick in and out. It's a great way to spend, you know, a post-dinner date.
So if you're looking on the EGADS Theater website, which is egadstheater.com, just scratch the 9:15 performances off of there. Only at 8 o'clock p.m. at the Off-Center Theater in Crown Center. Now, that's the one at the far north end of Crown Center. American Heartland Theater was at the far south. The Coterie was also at the south end, but on the very lowest level, but this is on the high level where the movie theaters used to be, I guess, and still are.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. It's right next to Screenland. In fact, last Monday, they had an open house for Screenland, so trying to get more traffic and attention into that side of the building down by Vivoni's, I think. Vinoni's? I'm not even going to talk about it anymore. I'm botching this.
But the important thing is you can get popcorn and drinks to bring into the theater, our theater as well, while you're watching Tell Me on a Sunday. So that's a benefit of being with the movie theater.
It is.
Sure.
Yeah, it's lovely. You know, you get the big comfy chairs and the cup holders. It's like, you know, being in your Lazy Boy lounger at home.
Well, let's talk about some of those songs now. You said you were attracted by the music initially, so tell us about some of the songs in the show.
Hopefully there are several that are recognizable for audience members. Of course, there's the title song, Tell Me on a Sunday, in which the character of Emma goes through all the different ways in which she will accept a breakup, a breakup proposal, if you will. And it's a very bittersweet song, but I think the meaning of it will resonate and ring true.
What's a good breakup? What's a not so good of a breakup? I guess texting would be no good.
No, it says in the song, don't get drunk and slam the door. That's no way to end this. She says, I know how I want to say goodbye. Tell me in a park on a Sunday.
Huh.
You know, don't make this bad. This was a great relationship, but it has to end. So let me down easy.
Okay.
Other familiar songs might be Unexpected Song is also in the show, and Nothing Like You've Ever Known. Several different songs that have made it through many different musical theaters, recording compilations. People who love Andrew Lloyd Webber do love songs from this show in particular.
Does this show have a New York history?
It does. It actually has a pretty impressive history. It began in 1979 in the UK. Andrew Lloyd Webber had written it for an actress called Marty Webb. And then in 1982, I believe, Cameron Mackintosh proposed to Lloyd Webber that he combine Tell Me on a Sunday as the first act to a show called Song and Dance. And then Act Two would feature variations that Lloyd Webber had written for his brother Julian, who was a cellist. So Act One followed the girl, and Act Two followed one of the boys the girl had met in Act One. And then by the end, they had a fairy tale happy ending where they were reunited. We like to leave it a little more open and nebulous and wondering, you know, how will this girl fare in life? So in 1985, there was a U.S. production on Broadway featuring Bernadette Peters. In fact, I think she won the Tony Award for it that year. And so this is the first act of that. This is the first act of the U.S. version of Song and Dance, otherwise known as Tell Me on a Sunday. It seems really complicated, doesn't it?
Well, we don't have Shelby, unfortunately, but we do have the Bernadette Peters.
We do have the cast recording to play for you. Of course, we we are partial to listening to Shelby's renditions of these songs. But Bernadette's not too hard on the ears either.
So let's listen to that now. Now, which number is it? It's cut number 14. I've got that.
That's right. And this is Tell Me on a Sunday, the title song from the musical.
the lovely voice of Bernadette Peters. But we're going to hear the version sung by Shelby Floyd. but Bernadette Peters, and I assume the Broadway version of Tell Me on a Sunday.
Yes, that is. That's from the Broadway cast recording of Song and Dance, if people want to go looking for that one.
Yeah, but it will be sung here by Shelby Floyd here in Kansas City, and performances of Tell Me on a Sunday continue tonight, the 18th. That's tonight at 8 o'clock p.m. at the Off Center Theater in Crown Center. The number to call for more information is 816-545-6000 or online. I assume you can buy things online. You just go through
click-offs
at EGADS. I should spell that probably. EGADS. EGADStheater.com to learn more about Tell Me on a Sunday and all of the EGADs, probably all of the UBank productions.
Yes, EGADs exactly. Theater productions. You can find lots of history and photos and fun things and then info about this show as well.
Yeah, well, what more do you want to say about this show? It's obviously you picked it. The music touched your heart.
It did. It did very much. And, you know, it's a story that I know I've been through. It's a story I know many of my friends have been through. Maybe not identical, but familiar. It's been a very dynamic show. We actually were rehearsing this one while Shelby was performing in Carrie at the same time, which is kind of, I think, the time when I maybe decided never make you do two shows in one day. What was it that you said a moment ago? Go for quality, not quantity.
Yeah.
Well, that's the best way to go, I'm sure. Yeah.
It's been really fun to do this as a limited engagement. You know, normally we try to run 4 or 5 weekends, and this has just been a very quick 3-week process, with just opening night being one night of a weekend, and then we took a hiatus.
Not to get too much on the business side, but is that
sure.
The way it is at the Off Center Theater? You're assigned certain weekends?
It's always different. There are several resident companies, and we work with the theater's manager, and try, you know, to all play well at recess together, and then he is usually able to give us the ideal dates that we've requested. But there certainly is give and take within
that. Is that easier now with, and it's unfortunate, of course, but with the American Heartland Theater no longer in operation, is it more difficult?
No, honestly, it hasn't made, the only impact it has made is that we are seeing more faces, friendly faces, from the American Heartland Theater's patron base.
Ah.
You know, they were very, very loyal for so long. In fact, for Tell Me on a Sunday, it's great. I feel like we've had an older, more mature audience than we have in a while. I'm hoping some of that is also due to people seeing Shelby in Hello Dolly at MTH. But Shelby also did do some work at the Heartland. So it's great to see that family members who were drawn and attracted to Crown Center are remaining.
Is this the kind of role, Shelby, that you enjoy with the singing? Would you do just a straight comedy?
I'm having so much fun. Yeah, I get to be a little funny sometimes. Funny, I hope. Which I absolutely love doing, and I get to have a British accent, which I don't often get to do, so that's very fun. And I love singing all over the board, and this show certainly does that. The show spans, I think, 3 to 4 octaves in one song. Actually, it covers 3 different octaves, so it is a vocal challenge, and I'm loving doing it. I get to belt out some stuff and take some stuff a little more sentimentally too, so it's a blast.
Yeah. I think musical theater lovers and pop music lovers for that matter will probably really enjoy this. It's a little dated. It's a little 80s, which is one of the reasons why we sat there. We are. We're going along with the time period show. Now, Michael, you know, 80s is now thought of as vintage.
I know.
That makes you cringe.
Well, yeah. Yeah. So it kind of disco kind of works its way.
There is. There's a little disco beat in the song English Girls. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And a fabulous red 80s dress.
Something
beautiful
harkening back
shoulder
to,
pad.
That's exactly right. Something that you might see from Dynasty or perhaps later on in Designing Women.
Yeah, yeah. People are probably saying, Dynasty. What was that?
Joan Collins and Delta Burke would both be very proud.
Yeah, I was born in the 90s.
Oh, sorry. Reference right over the head.
Oh, yes. But with reruns being what they are, you could see them all over again.
Yes.
Speaking with Stephen Eubank, the director, and Shelby Floyd, the actress and singer. In the show, Tell Me on a Sunday, three more big performances left at the Off-Center Theater in Crown Center. Tonight, for one, an industry night performance on Monday the 18th, 8 o'clock p.m. tonight. Then two more performances on Friday and Saturday evenings at 8 o'clock p.m., all at the Off-Center Theater of Crown Center. The number to call, once again, for more information, 816-545-6000 or egadstheater.com. What's coming up for both of you once you finish this run this week? Stephen probably has plans.
I do, yes. We are coming up on season auditions right now for two musicals that we're doing next year. We're going to do Godspell in the spring, and then we're going to do Lysistrata Jones as our summer musical, which is kind of a mashup of, you know, the Lysistrata legend, for those who know that, and Disney's High School Musical. Unintentionally, I don't think they meant to make it that.
I'm thinking, what will Stephen Eubank do with Godspell?
I will probably be pretty reverent with it, Michael. I love that show.
Okay.
And, you know, it's in its day and age, it was challenging material.
Okay, anything else you have coming up?
I would like to invite everyone to my big gay birthday bash on Monday, December 23rd, at which I just found out you'll be able to see Shelby Floyd performing. Yeah, she'll be there. And that one's a lot of fun. We do it as a fundraiser, and it's
For EGAS.
For EGAS Theater mm-hmm. Company, but it is my fifth annual birthday bash floor show.
We want to ask how old you are. Not many, folks. Not many at all.
More than I used to be.
What about Shelby? What do you have coming up?
What do I have coming up? Well, I just...
You just booked a performance at this birthday.
Yeah, I just, you know, I just booked a performance for Rihanna's birthday. I'm going to be singing with Epic Entertainment. I'm doing a Divas concert on the 28th.
Do we know which diva, or is it a mix of divas?
I don't know which diva yet. They haven't told me what songs I get to sing yet, so I'm, like, dying. I'm like, Celine. I want Celine.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to be working with the Coterie. I don't think I can reveal what show yet, but okay. I am working with the Coterie later on this year. Very excited for that. And, I just got my website up and running, shelbyfloyd.com, and just signed to Talent Unlimited, my first agency. So
congratulations.
Thank you. So hopefully, you know, I'll be having good luck like I have this past year and the past couple of years, you know.
So you want to do mostly musical theater? Are you open to doing other things?
Let's
promote you right now.
I love entertaining, and I'm hoping to get into some more commercial work. And of course, musical theater is my first love, and that's what I am pursuing currently. And
well, good luck with all of that. You can see her right now before she gets any bigger and she's more expensive to see. Tell Me on a Sunday, three more big performances tonight at 8 o'clock p.m. at the Off-Center Theater in Crown Center. Also Friday the 22nd at 8 o'clock p.m. Saturday the 23rd at 8 o'clock p.m. All at the Off-Center Theater in Crown Center, the very north side of Crown Center, where the movies still are, but one of them are... How many theaters did they take out for that? Two movie theaters?
They kept two movie theaters. I think they used four different cinema bays to become Off-Center Theater. So it's intimate, but it is a three-quarters thrust.
So there still is theater at Crown Center, downstairs at the Coterie, and upstairs at the Off-Center Theater. So you've lost a little, but you've gained a little.
Oh, it's a heartbreak.
I know.
We all mourned, I think,
all of us
severely.
All of us that saw all those shows, and I saw all of them for many years, we miss it, but... We must move on to the next step.
Absolutely. Just keep creating.
That's right. Thanks so much for being with us. Stephen Eubank, the director, and he's also performed at many places as well. Shelby Floyd, actress and singer. She has sung and performed and obviously will be performing at other places in the future. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
Freeze frame!
Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Freeze Frame, KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic fare at your local theaters. Blue is the Warmest Color was the big winner at this year's Cannes International Film Festival, heralded as a masterpiece by some and as pornography by others. The truth lies somewhere in between. The story deals with young lesbian lovers in northern France. The film's graphic and highly controversial sex scenes have earned it an NC-17 rating that it deserves, but the movie would have worked without them, thanks to the brilliant performances by its young stars, Adele Exarchopoulos and Léa Seydoux. They shared the award at Cannes with filmmaker Abdellatif Kechiche. Were the actresses exploited? Perhaps. Still, the resulting film is a realistic and heartbreaking account of the minefield of young romance. Malcolm D. Lee's popular 1999 romantic comedy, The Best Man, finally gets a sequel as the cast reunites for The Best Man Holiday. Taye Diggs, Nia Long, Morris Chestnut, Terrence Howard, and their former college friends get together at Christmas time and their old conflicts are rekindled. The cast is terrific and the film is often funny, but it's also overlong and overly maudlin. It's a messy but likable reunion. Charles Dickens' classic coming-of-age novel, Great Expectations, gets the big screen treatment once again. Young Jeremy Irvine plays Pip, Helena Bonham Carter is the enigmatic Miss Havisham, and Ralph Fiennes is the mysterious convict Magwitch in this handsome adaptation directed by Mike Newell of Four Weddings and a Funeral fame. While it won't make anyone forget David Lean's exemplary 1946 version of the novel, it's a well-acted and workmanlike adaptation for newcomers. Also opening this week, God Loves Uganda is a documentary from Oscar-winning filmmaker Roger Ross Williams about the evangelical crusade in Uganda that is bringing a backlash against homosexuals there. Some of the missionaries involved are from Kansas City's International House of Prayer. Well, that's it for this edition of Freeze Frame. Until next time, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI FM.
Welcome to This Week on Stage, underwritten by KC Stage Magazine, your most comprehensive source for performing arts in Kansas City. Find out what's playing at kcstage.com. Opening this week, Christmas in Song, Quality Hill Playhouse. Rudolph the Recycled Reindeer plus Vaudeville Review with the Waterglass Symphony, Martin City Melodrama and Vaudeville Company. Every Christmas Story Ever Told and Then Some, Paradise Playhouse Dinner Theater. JFK, A Ghostly Evening, Melting Pot, KC. A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, Slightly Off-Broadway Theater. This week only, The Shape of Things, University of Central Missouri Theater and Dance Department, and Enemy of the People, Rockhurst University. Still playing this week, Forever Plaid, Chestnut Fine Arts Theater. The Whiz, Coterie Theater. Your Hit Parade, Quality Hill Playhouse. Never Too Late, New Theater Restaurant, Musical Mondays 2013, Musical Theater Heritage. Closing this week, Drood, The Mystery of Edwin Drood, The Barn Players, Inc., Les Miserables, The White Theater, The Discovery Project, Relis and Cressida, UMKC Theater. These shows can be reviewed online at our website at kcstage.com. Over 200 performing arts organizations listing auditions, performances, and events. Week on Stage is a public service of KC Stage Magazine and 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
This week, we meet the man who emails a prayer to President Obama every morning, Joshua Dubois.
I got his email address from a friend of mine and drafted up a brief reflection, and I sent it off to him and held my breath, wondering if I was going to get fired, and he wrote me back and said, Joshua, this is exactly what I needed this morning. Would you do this every day?
I'm Maureen Fiedler. That's next time on Interfaith Voices.
Tuesday at noon, right before the Jazz Disciple.
And welcome back to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. We're going to talk to an old friend. We were just talking about old times just a few minutes ago before
we were.
We knew some people in common when I was in the television business. He was a musician, and he was sort of in that business as well. We were talking about that, but now we're going to talk about Ron and his new book, the third book that he's written. It's called Bloody But Unbowed. I take it that, Ron, that this book must have something to do with the music business, the jazz, maybe?
Yes, yeah. It's everything I do. You know, 45 years as a jazz musician, and I was a real jazz musician. I mean, I made a living out of it. I didn't, you know, for much of that, I didn't work days. I managed to make a middle-class living at it. So my character is Dorsey Glenn Miller. He was named after his dad was a swing trombone player, and he named him after his two favorite trombone players, Tommy Dorsey and Glenn Miller.
Yeah, now, this guy was in one of your other books. Was it your first book?
Yes, my first book. He was the protagonist in An Anarchist Lullaby, and I described him as Dorsey Miller, a gifted underachiever. He was a formerly abused child. And basically, his story is just trying to find his way in life, you know, seeking redemption.
For those who read the first book or didn't read the second book, what is happening to Mr. Miller?
Well, Mr. Miller has been hiding out in Mexico City.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, he was involved in a fiasco where he had to flee. I mean, he was lucky to get away with his life. It was a battle he couldn't win, and the victory was realizing it. And he managed to get out with quite a lot of money and ended up hiding out in Mexico for 10 years. And he decides to return to Kansas City when he hears that his old manager, his old boxing manager and father figure, Mickey Delaney, was brutally murdered.
Uh-huh.
And he's going to come back and check that out.
So he's got to uncover what really happened.
Yes. And the whole book takes place in Kansas City, Lawrence, and a little bit in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Your book so far have talked about Kansas City and the music business, the neighborhood you grew up in.
The second, the nonfiction book, was about my old neighborhood. This is about Dorsey is what I call a floater. He never fits in anywhere. He's really intelligent, but he's kind of a consummate underdog. He is never a part of anything. He is emotionally scarred from having been an abused child. And is trying to find his way, you know, trying to break the chain of abuse. And he's quite, the consummate hustler, and I don't mean that in a bad way. He's a street person who can always get by. He's the king of the streets. You know? And that's his world, you know. And when he gets into trouble is when he gets involved in the straight or workaday world. Yeah, he doesn't understand that, doesn't fit in, and has never been a part of it.
Yeah, Kansas City, unfortunately, has that reputation of being kind of a wide-open town.
Yeah.
People tell me not as much as it once was.
No.
But if you've been played for in these places for 45 years, you've probably seen some oddities happen.
Talk about oddities. Hemingway said you should write about something you know. So my father was a boxer, and so I made my protagonist a former boxer who's a musician. Both are things that I know a lot about, you know.
Sure.
But when I was playing, I used to shadowbox 3 rounds a day because you never knew what was going to happen. I didn't want to beat anybody up. It was if something happened, I wanted to be able to punch my way out of it. And I mean, I can remember, I played the good places. I had the good jobs. I wasn't working the joints, you know, like I was working the hotels. The worst brawl I saw was at the Hilton Penthouse down on Admiral. Just all of a sudden, a fight broke out, and there was 20, 30 people throwing punches.
Yeah.
Just for no reason at all. Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask, just as a way of ground, some of the places that you played, who you may have played with?
Played for a long time with Gary Sibbles, and who's a really great player, a band that at one point in time included Pat Metheny. And one of my favorite jobs was my dear friend Kay Dennis, a wonderful singer. And this is in no part because of me. But her band owned Kansas City from 1967 to 1970. We had all the best jobs, and we were the biggest name in town. She could have done it with another bass player. I'm quite happy that she chose me.
Yeah.
And it was a success that, you know, I felt that I contributed, but my effort was not what drove the machine. You know, it was Kay. She was very attractive and an excellent singer. And, boy, that was really fun.
What made the music business kind of migrate towards Kansas City? I mean, it's in other places, too. But Kansas City, is it because of the central location?
I really don't know. I mean, I worked in New York. I worked in Los Angeles for a while. That's not something. Kansas City's always had a good jazz scene, much better than Los Angeles. There's a great jazz scene in New York, but boy, is it ever hard to crash.
I bet.
Yeah, it's hard. I spent one summer working in New York with Kay, and it's a insider's club.
I do remember her. Didn't she have a husband who was a disc jockey on the radio?
Dave Robinson. Uh-huh. Yeah, he. Dave's gone now. He's no longer with us. Yeah.
And he also managed her. At least I remember him talking about her. I was just a kid, but I remember him talking about her when he was on the air.
He was the king of the illegal plugs.
Oh, Technically, I guess that would
Yeah. He had that. He knew exactly what he'd get away with.
Yeah. Kansas City just has that that reputation, well, one, for barbecue. Jazz music and organized crime, unfortunately. And that played a part in a couple of your novels.
I grew up in Mafia Land. I'm an old Northeast Thai boy. And I'm not joking now. My brother and I were negotiating that for all of our high school years. I mean, at my high school, the junior high, they were selling parlay cards for illegal gambling.
Did you try your best to stay away from
it? My brother got into the gambling thing, but he's fine. But I figured out real quick, there's a good time to keep your mouth shut, close your eyes, and get the hell out.
Well, like I said, you know, three of your books have touched at least.
That's the battle you're not going to win. That's the battle you're not going to win.
You know? I suppose not. So you decided at one point, he says, well, you know, I have all these stories popping around in my mind. I suppose I should try to change them around a little bit. And that's probably wise to do so.
Yeah, well, I think all fiction has reality in real life, because that's how you build your characters. You have a basic template for a character, and then from there it's fiction. But the template is someone you know practically always.
So would it be safe for me to assume, and you know what they say about assuming.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that.
Dorsey's based on a local cat.
And some of the characters he is involved with, they're loosely based at least. People. People you knew or knew about.
I've always written. I had a parallel career as a musician. I was a composer, a jazz composer, and I had a group for 35 years called the Ron Roberts Concert Ensemble, and I wrote almost all of the music for that. So some of the better musicians in Kansas City played in that. Steve Cardenas for 3 years, Charles Perkins, Rod Fleeman, Paul Evans, some outstanding musicians, Greg Briggs. The band existed for 35 years, and we didn't do any club work. We did college concerts, things like that, and I wrote all of the music for that. And when my music career started to run down, I still had things I wanted to say. The nice thing about writing books is that you can be specific. You can say things with music. You can imply things, but you can never really be absolutely specific. And that's the advantage of being a writer of words. Mm-hmm. But I wrote during my music career also. I wrote for the Shelter newspaper. I was at one point the music editor for a underground paper called City Lights. I also wrote some for the Westport Trucker, and I actually did a music review or two for the Kansas City Star. So writing was nothing new to me. But when Father Time caught up with me and the old hands started going, and I could no longer be the musician I wanted to be, I chose to stop playing, and that's when I really started writing in earnest.
Writing it as fiction is a lot easier than writing it as nonfiction.
You know, they're about equal. I don't have any trouble. Nonfiction, you know where you're going, but I don't have any trouble. I mean, the way my process is, I get an idea and I don't put anything on paper. I just kind of mull it around for a while, mm-hmm. and by the time I get to the paper, it's all there.
Do you have an idea when you begin where you can end up going?
Yeah.
And does that parallel what actually happened to some of these characters in actual life? I don't mean to tease the audience.
No, my plots are pure fiction. The reality is you just, you know, like I said, you create the template. Uh-huh. You find an interesting person, say, hey, this guy would make a good character in my novel, and then you build him a different life.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
It's a launching point.
I suppose so. Yeah, have you also dabbled in some nonfiction?
Yes, my second book, and Meatball Sandwich, mm-hmm. a sandwich with a G. That's the way the Italians say it in my old neighborhood. Hey, give me a meatball sandwich. And that's nonfiction and humor. It's all the crazy stuff that my brother Terry and I did when we were kids.
Sure, I hope you don't mind my backtracking to that. That was actually the neighborhood you grew up in.
Oh yeah, it was.
Do you mind saying where it was? St. John was one of the.
It was. We lived at 211 South Monroe, uh-huh. which was between St. John and Independence Avenue in what was called the Northeast area, and it was absolutely white because in those days, because the Mafia had a decree there would be no African Americans north of Independence Avenue or east of the Paseo.
Oh.
And they knew how to enforce it.
Well, that's
My graduating class from Northeast was 375, and there were no African Americans.
Well, that would be very unusual.
It was a very unique place in time. It's still out there. It's called Meatball Sandwich. I might mention while we're talking, Michael, that I use my full name, Ronald Roberts, in all of my writing. But be assured that Ronald Roberts, the author, and Ron Roberts, the jazz cat, are the same dude.
I was speaking with Ronald Roberts, the author, and we're talking about his, well, we're talking about all of his books. But mostly we're talking about his new book, Bloody But Unbad. It's the third book that he's written, and I guess he has some other books in mind. People want to know, well, where can we find the books of Ronald Roberts? You told me earlier they were available at Amazon.com.
Yeah, all three of my books are available at Amazon.com as paperbacks. You saw, I mean, they're really nice looking books. You saw I brought in my proof.
Mm-hmm.
They're also available as ebooks at Kindles for the people that own, and you can now read ebooks on practically everything. Kindles that are their little computer devices on your laptop, on your iPhone, on your iPad. You can download books on any of these devices now.
Now, people, can understand buying a book at Amazon.com.
Yeah.
You just do it in the conventional way. You buy anything.
Yeah.
If we may, for a second, let's talk about a Kindle. So, you have to have the Kindle device.
Well, not anymore. I mean, that used to be the case. But now you can download Kindle books on your smartphone. And read them on your phone, on your iPad, on your my new laptop. As I bought a new laptop in last January, it has a Kindle app. I can just download books and read it on my laptop.
So if they wanted to do that, if they wanted to go somewhere, download a copy of your book, there would be a cost involved. We know this.
They're a lot cheaper than the paperbacks, let me say that.
I'll bet so. But they would be able to keep that then as a file on their computer indefinitely?
Yes. Uh-huh. And all they have to do is go to the Kindle store. And then it's a simple process. Then type in my book and my name. As I mentioned, I should have researched my title a little better. I figured the poem that I based it on, Invictus by William Ernest Henley, was an anachronism by now. But there are two other books named Bloody Butter and Bowed out there. That's on me. It's my fault. I should have checked that out. But all they have to do is type in Bloody Butter and Bowed and Ronald Roberts, and it'll take you right there.
Okay.
Give
me
your credit.
So just to clarify, we'd go to the Kindle website.
Kindle store.
The Kindle store, look up your name, your book, whichever book they want to read, and they can then pay for it, of course.
Yeah.
But then they could download the entire book as a file to their computer.
Yes, that's correct.
So it would be theirs forever.
Yes, that's
just
correct.
As if they bought a copy of the book from the store.
It's called e-books, and that's the new thing. I mean, I'm a real book guy. I don't want to see the demise of books. I mean, I've been an avid reader all of my life.
Sure.
My partner and I are both constantly at the Johnson County Library. You know?
Oh, sure. Okay. Well, that's a new way of doing things there. As you look into the future, do you think reading will be that way? I would hate to see the library go away. I love the library.
Oh, I do, too. But actually, libraries are doing e-books now. Yeah. And I think that's the way of the future, right?
Instead of buying a book now, with all excuses for the author, they'll be able to check out a book and read it for a certain amount of time.
Yeah. Well, authors love Kindle because Kindle pays 70%. You know, I mean, it's a really good deal for authors, and you can get a book up in less than an hour. Now, if you're going with a conventional publisher, that's if you're a big name. Guys like me will never see this, but if you're a big name, the best you're going to see is 15%, and it takes a year to get a book up.
So that's where they can...
Authors, big-time authors, are doing e-books and self-publishing now because they make a lot more money.
Well, I guess that's the new... Of course, the Internet has changed everything for everyone.
Well, the iconoclast in me loves the prospect of cutting out the middleman. And that's exactly the publishers are scared to death. They're not signing any new authors because things are changing. Very rapidly.
So would you recommend for someone that they consider going this route? I mean, I guess a publisher would want to edit the book because they're worried about liabilities and all that.
Well, that's the other thing. I had agents and things. I mean, people telling me to change this, change that. I get what I want. I mean, I get it. My new book is perfect. and no one else has edited it, it's exactly what I wanted. It's perfect in my eyes. I'm not saying it's perfect to the world. It's exactly what I wanted, how I wanted it. And I actually didn't have any kind of editor or anything. I had a proofreader.
But I
just wanted to be left to my own, to sink or swim on my own devices.
So as you listen out there, folks, I mean, that's something you might want to think about at least.
Yeah, I would recommend this to any person who's writing. This is the way to go. It's relatively simple.
Yeah, I know people who have written books, but they say it's just about impossible to get a manuscript published these days.
Well, part of the problem is if you're living in Kansas City. If you live in New York, you can do these things personally. You know, there isn't any publishing thing here. Yeah. Most writers live in New York for that reason.
Sure. Well, we're speaking with Ronald Roberts, the author, jazz musician for 45 years. His new book is called Bloody But Unbowed. You can get it at Amazon.com or the Kindle store as well, give you an idea of how that works. It's a story. It's a fictional story, as he said. It involves some of the elements of his own life, I guess boxing, music, and the elements of organized crime, which seem to come into all of Kansas City's stories anymore. But Kansas City has become famous for that, for good or ill. That's what Kansas City is known for.
That's correct.
Some of the musicians you've met, and you mentioned some of the names earlier that you played with over the years. Can you point to any one incident, someone who became famous that you played with?
Oh, Pat Metheny. Pat Metheny. I met Pat when he was 13. I was working at Quigley Music, and this kid came in with braces. Curly-headed kid with braces came in and pointed to a Gibson Birdland, which is a high-dollar jazz instrument, and says, "Can I play that guitar?" And I said, "Can you?" And he said, "Yes," in a very positive manner. I said, "Sure, I got it." Give him a lead chord, said, "Amster in the back room, help yourself." Then I went down and sat down with the other salespeople, and this beautiful full-court arrangement of Here's That Rainy Day came out, and somebody said, "Who's playing guitar back there? It can't be that darn kid." And I said, "That darn kid is the only one back there." That's how I met Pat Metheny. Yeah. And I must say, I've never met a more talented, more generous, or more dedicated person. I mean, all the Kansas City guitarists, like Steve Cardenas. Steve told me, Steve's my pal. You know, he was in my concert ensemble for 3 years. He said when he moved to New York, Pat got him work right away, got him work without auditions. I mean, just any of the Kansas City guys, man, Pat's their agent, you know.
Yeah, with the new technologies and all of that, is music, the live music scene, is it better? Is it not as good?
It's not as good. I was at the late Cary Strayer's funeral and was talking with some good friends about this. In my day, a typical job, I moved my amplifier into the Kansas City Playboy Club in late 1972. Wow. Played there six nights a week with no dance floor. It was a jazz job. 2.5 years later, I moved my amp out. The guys today really have a rough row to hoe. They're playing one-nighters. They're moving their gear every night. And I mean, in my day, you know, you signed on a job and you might be there 2 years. You know, we were I was with Gary Sibbles and Bob Richardson, and we were there for 2.5 years. You know, went to work every night, and 9 to 1. I worked with some really famous people that we did the shows on weekends, and one of the people I worked with was a very young Jay Leno.
Oh, wow.
He was a delightful guy. Mm-hmm. You could see that Jay was really funny without being crazy. Some of those guys they're just as crazy off the stage as they are on. Jay was really funny on the stage, and you could see him getting better every night, but he was very well grounded. You know, you knew Jay was going to succeed.
Well, I guess the scenes change and
that.
Where do you see it going? Will Kansas City get back to that reputation?
Yeah, I don't know what's happening with. I know the recording thing has really changed. Everybody's doing downloads now, much like the Kindle store. They're not signing with record labels. They can make more money doing the downloads and just going about themselves. And of course, the record labels were famous for cheating their artists anyway.
Oh no!
they were there. We could do a show on that sometime.
Okay.
Yeah. I have some stories that I heard as vice president of the Musicians Union that were just downright appalling.
Sounds like another book.
Yeah, yes, it does, yes.
Well, I want to thank you for coming in and talking about your book. His new book, Bloody But Unbowed, the further adventures of...
Dorsey Glenn Miller.
Dorsey Glenn Miller. So you worked all of the famous names into your title. Dorsey Glenn Miller. Saga continues. Will it continue in other books?
Yeah, I think so. I've left this at a spot. There's two new characters in this that I think will probably become serial characters, what they call serial characters. I plan on doing another book at some point. I have two nonfiction books I'm working on now that I need to finish first.
Okay. Well, thanks for coming in. Tell us again about your new book, your past books.
I have three books. I have An Anarchist Lullaby, and Bloody But Unbowed are both kind of suspense books. And my other book is a nonfiction book of autobiographical humor called Meatball Sandwich. Drive fast and talk back to the cops.
That's I don't recommend that. Maybe that's what happened.
Brian Burns of the Star told me that. That's two really bad pieces of advice.
Yeah, it really is. Thanks for coming in.
My pleasure, Mike.
Ron Roberts, author, jazz musician for 45 years here in Kansas City, and his third book, Bloody But Unbowed, now available at Amazon.com if you want a hard copy, or at the Kindle store if you want to download and have your own copy of the book to read on your computer. Available, I guess, indefinitely at those two sources. Yeah. Thanks so much for being with us, Ron.
My pleasure, Mark.
Jazz Insider is next. I'll bet you know a lot of the people
who play. I listen to him every day.
Great jazz from 1 to 3, the blues from 3 to 6, right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. So until next week, meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that crossing the road. I'm Michael Hogue. We'll see you next time.
Listening to the Arts Magazine Show here on 90.1 FM KKFI. Coming up next is Jazz Afternoon, the jazz from 1 to 3 p.m., then the blues from 3 to 6 p.m. right here at your community radio station, 90.1 FM. Currently 55 degrees in Kansas City. This afternoon, sunny with a high near 56. Tonight, mostly clear with a low around 39 degrees, and on Tuesday, mostly sunny with a high near 59 degrees.